Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Inside Graphic Novels, where together we'll be taking a deep dive into the world of graphic novels and the people that help make them as special as they are. Today's episode is a really special one as we talk about a graphic novel that is purely biographical. And this time around, I mean, the man needs no introduction. You heard him say it before, I am the greatest. And that was, of course, I'm going to say it anyway, Muhammad Ali, known also to us as Cassius Clay, before he went and changed just about everything about himself, including his religion. The story is an incredible one that's born out of Louisville and takes you through Muhammad Ali's incredible career, all the different countries he fought in. And I think that the authors have done an incredible job with the research behind the story and the amount of detail that they managed to pen down. I especially love the cover of the graphic novel itself, and you look at a very smug Ali. And I think if you see a lot of video coverage of Muhammad Ali, and I'd encourage you to do that even after reading the graphic novel, and you look at YouTube or a bunch of other resources and watch clips of Ali fighting, he was cocky and had so much attitude. I think his lips probably moved a little bit faster than his feet, although definitely not faster than his arms. But an incredible, incredible entertainer, an incredible sportsman, athlete, visionary, and certainly somebody that's probably had one of the largest impacts, outsized impacts on the world of sport this century. Originally published out of Brussels in November 2016 by Le Lombard, who have probably one of the most incredible French written language catalog that you could want to ever read in your life. The guys at Dark Horse, I think, did an excellent job picking that one up and published that in November 2016, almost a year after, to a English-speaking audience. Now, the story was originally written by Sybil, and I'm not going to pronounce her last name right, so you're going to have to bear with me. This is one of the challenges, I think, of being in a space where there's so many incredibly talented French writers and artists. But it's Sybil Titu de la Croix, and also supported very ably and masterfully on the art side by the amazing Amizan, who is also in his own right a script writer, but first and foremost for us the artist behind Muhammad Ali. So I love what the two of them have done with the entire story. I know Dark Horse says it's graphic literature, which is exactly what I think this book is. And I guess one of the complexities of telling a story that spans so many years of Muhammad Ali's life and goes into so much detail, right from his very humble beginnings of his first few fights, how much money he made, which I think was pittance. I think he made about $14 or something from his first few fights, and taking him all the way from there to winning his gold over at Rome. There's just so much detail and so much richness, but above all, and again, this is very timely, that there's a huge spotlight on the civil rights movement and a number of the important figures that punctuated that time period, such as, of course, Dr. King, and very interestingly, Louis Farrakhan and Malcolm X as well. So there's a great backdrop to the story, which of course frames Muhammad Ali's struggle and really captures the imagination of the reader on why he was fighting so hard. I think in many ways, and of course there's lots of documentation showing that the rise of young boxers at that time from African-American communities was quite a bit to do with the struggle that they were having with the authorities, with society on a whole, where at the time, while Muhammad Ali was growing up, as a black person in America, you couldn't even go into some places to eat because that was law where he was based, in the state that he was based in. So incredible amounts of detail there on the challenges that African Americans faced during the time. But I want to focus a little bit on some of the things that I think could have been done better as well. I mean, I often praise graphic novels and I do love them. And in this case, again, the artist and the writer have done a superb job. But one place where I thought they missed a little bit of detail was in that incredibly important first fight that took him onto a global stage, where Muhammad Ali had flown to Rome to fight and eventually goes on to win the gold medal. And that fight is just missing in the graphic novel. And I've watched that fight on TV. And I mean, this is an old fight. We're talking about black and white footage. And he has the number 272. And they got his costume right. So they show him, you know, standing there on the podium in the graphic novel, but you don't see his number. And I think what you don't see is his opponent, which I think is a very important part of the whole story. So that's one place that I think they could do a great job if they were to come up with a second edition. But what a great start to the story. And I hope as I take you through it, not trying to give away too much, but taking you on the story of his life, both inside the graphic novel and outside, hope to manage to convince you to pick up this very special book and add it to your growing collection of graphic novels that I'm recommending.
I'm gonna float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. George can't hit what his hands can't see.
When you're writing graphic novels that often have historical backdrops and are doing research through that period, I think one of the things that you notice is that there is very often a reference to some sort of article in Time magazine. And I think this is important because Time was, at the time, the most important publication in North America, possibly the world, and would be looked at as the apogee of someone's career if they did manage to get mentioned in the publication. And you see that very cleverly communicated through the work where Sibyl, the writer, has shown that Muhammad Ali actually did, he craved that coverage. He wanted to make sure that he got into that magazine, and in fact he went on in the future to have his face on the cover a number of times, both positive stories as well as negative ones, where he once almost lost his title, because he did actually. This was when he and Leon Sprinks had a fight way back in 1978, which ended in a split decision, and Spinks was crowned the heavyweight champion of the world. And the magazine, the Time magazine at the time, cover said, "The greatest is gone." And so I think the first time, however, when he really wanted to get into the magazine, Muhammad Ali, being the PR stuntsman that he was, did everything that he could by getting in front of the journalists and giving them all sorts of stories, such as the fact that he used to train underwater, and just pique their interest in covering him. and making sure that it got him on the cover of that magazine. So I think what a lot of these very successful graphic novelists do is employ this trick of capturing a real page of history, which is literally verbatim taking a few pages of Time magazine and translating it into their medium. And again, the artist and the author have done that very, very well. Also in the case of covering the exceptional Malcolm Little, who is also known to us as Malcolm X. And very recently, I rewatched Spike Lee's incredible storytelling of Malcolm X, which I think is worth its own podcast, probably, because it's such a great story, but also how he went from a small town boy to really becoming the one of the leaders of the NOI, the Nation of Islam, which is what Muhammad Ali ended up joining because of his deep friendship with people like Malcolm X. So the coverage of Time magazine, I think, is a pretty clever instrument for anybody writing these historical graphic novels and adding legitimacy to their work by pulling those references into the actual body of work themselves. I was recently watching Masterclass, and I need to say this is not a paid for ad, because it's incredibly important to declare whether you're getting paid for any of this work or not when you promote something. But Masterclass is truly an incredible resource when it comes to learning new skills. And what I was doing is trying to educate myself on how to be a better writer. And here I am doing a podcast, but in the writing part of things, one of the tricks that many of the different instructors give you is that when you're writing a story, it's often very, very difficult when you have too many different characters. And I think one of the things that we need to do is tip our hat to both the author and the illustrator on how great a job they've done with providing signposting to those different characters right from the get-go. So I think when you open up the cover, one of the first few things that you see is, with a beautiful mustard yellow backdrop, you see 20 pictures of people that played an important role at the time. And we're talking about everybody from Martin Luther King to JFK, to Sonny Liston, and people like Drew Bundini, and of course Don King, and so forth. And as you go across those various names and the very, very clever character summaries that you find on those two pages right in the inside of the cover, you get very excited, because you kind of get a 10,000 foot view of all the different characters that you're going to bump into along this journey. And so I thought that was just really cleverly done. And I think the illustrator has captured their profile pictures beautifully. So it's an incredibly diverse set of characters in every meaning of the word. And I'd highly recommend you get straight into this book so that you can start following Muhammad Ali all the way from his small town beginnings to his international glory and becoming the world champion, being, I think, the first person to become world champion of the world in heavyweight boxing 3 times in a row. I've mentioned Time magazine already as a device that the author and illustrator had used to give some legitimacy to the data they were presenting in the graphic novel. But I also think that it's important to talk about what's happened since the graphic novel has been released. And I haven't seen another edition, so bear with me. And if you do know of one, please do get in touch with me and let me know by sending me a message on Twitter. It's just at Fareed Haque, at FareedHaque, and I'd love to hear from you on that. But as recently as 2017 in June, Time magazine once again came forward with this incredible article that detailed the real reason why Muhammad Ali converted to Islam. And though his initial conversion was to the Nation of Islam, it's interesting and important to note that he later did go on to convert to more mainstream Sunni Islam. But the reason that he attributes to becoming a follower of Nation of Islam is, believe it or not, a cartoon, a comic that he sees, and that's referenced in a handwritten letter that's shown in this Time magazine article. Please do Google that. Just type in Time magazine Muhammad Ali Islam conversion and you'll see that article pop up. And he tells the story of him going home at night from a skating rink, and he more or less sees this Muhammad Speaks newspaper. And in that newspaper, there is a cartoon, and the cartoon was all about how the first slaves that had arrived in America and they were slipping off to pray, and of course a white slave master would run up behind them with a whip and hit the poor, and there was this quote saying, "What are you doing praying in that language? You know what I told you to speak." And the slave says, yes sir master, I pray to Jesus, sir Jesus." And he says in that article that he liked the cartoon and that it meant something to him and gripped his attention. And that's where his journey towards discovering and exploring the Nation of Islam actually started. So let's take a step back again and just pay attention to the fact that a comic book or a comic strip, rather, had an important role to play in shaping the life of Cassius Clay, who became Muhammad Ali. And I know that his name has been a particularly weaponized fact through his career as well, because some of his opponents refused to refer to him as Muhammad, and they would call him Clay, and that would infuriate him even more. So an important fact, clearly not in the graphic novel, but again, what a great opportunity for the author and the artist to perhaps incorporate some of that that's come to life thanks to some great reporting over at Time magazine. So we should probably close out the podcast with a quick review of what is probably the most important thing in this graphic novel, which is the actual fights themselves. So here, the graphic novel does not disappoint. I mean, you really have just about every single fight that Ali fought around the world, from across America, Africa, Asia. So we can go back all the way to the big fight with Sonny Liston in Miami in 1964, and you see every single round, 1 to 6, covered. And it almost feels like television, really. You can see every blow land, and it's just incredible to see how they've portrayed the World Heavyweight Championship in 1964, and then they move on to what became known as the Rumble in the Jungle, which took place in Zaire in 1974 against George Foreman. And I mean, the lyrical poet and boxing icon, I mean, what a show by Muhammad Ali, right? Because, I mean, I think what is very interesting is that in Zaire, where the boxing match takes place in a football stadium, what's interesting is that Ali manages to tell the crowd, he managed to tell the crowd and convince them that Foreman was actually in Belgium. So there are all these chants that are shown in the graphic novel saying Ali Bomae and Ali Bomae, which means, you know, Ali kill him, because the people in Zaire wanted their revenge against the Belgians. And of course, he wasn't Belgian, he was American. But what a fantastic piece of strategy by Muhammad Ali to get the crowd on his side. But that's one place where the graphic novel probably could do better, because it doesn't explain that. And I feel they probably didn't do that, because remember, it's a translation of a French work into English. So when written in French, you probably just got that, right? But of course, the English reader needs that context and explanation. So I'm giving it to you right here. Then after that, I think there isn't any mention of the Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia fight with Joe Bugner. I thought that was important because of the whole, boxing gloves not being tampered and sent to jail. And Muhammad Ali very famously says, the gloves are going to jail and they haven't done anything yet. So that's really important piece of history. And then finally, there was the Thriller in Manila, right? And this became a really big deal because this is where he fought against Joe Frazier. And this is the round by round pummeling, the absolutely brutal, older, slower fight where every punch is landing. I got this really by looking at the fights. And again, I'd really encourage you guys to go out there and Google the fights and watch the replays. And you will see how by this time in Manila, everybody's bigger, older, slower. So you can see these incredibly big punches land and cause some serious damage. But I think what is also noteworthy is that by the time you had the fight in Manila, the Joe Frazier conversation had turned pretty ugly, because as everybody knows, Ali used to like to taunt and trash talk his opponents, and I think he probably did that just to get in their heads. But here he talked about Joe Frazier as a gorilla, which sounds pretty racist in itself. But he talks about beating the gorilla in the Thriller in Manila, right? And that's him doing his whole poetry thing. But I'm sure in today's context, it would have come across wrong. Nonetheless, it's an incredible fight. And of course, things go in Muhammad Ali's way and Joe Frazier, gets knocked down. Again, you know, you're really looking at the sort of round by round play here, and they show you every single round up until the 14th. And of course, it's the 15th round where he just doesn't come back. And all this is just beautifully captured by the graphic novel. So you can tell that, I was a big fan. I actually met Muhammad Ali as a young child in the United Arab Emirates at school, where he was, he'd come over to our school to promote his, a brand of milk powder called Primo that he was supporting. And by this time, of course, Muhammad Ali was already going through Parkinson's, which I think some of you would be aware of. And his speech was slightly slurred. And I remember that even now. Of course, now we don't have him anymore. And may he rest in peace. But what a wonderful gift he's given us in terms of the joy and the entertainment and the excitement he brought to the world of boxing. So if his story interests you, please do run out and grab yourself a copy of Muhammad Ali by Sibyl Tutu and the amazing Amizan. It's by Dark Horse, and you could probably pick it up at Foyles at Waterloo Station if you're in London, or any other bookstore that has a great graphic novel section. You can definitely order it on Amazon. So good luck, everybody. And I look forward to getting some feedback from people that are listening on what you thought of this particular episode. Thank you again.